The unexamined life is not worth living.
I am going to speak in defense of people having separate checking accounts when they're married. I believe this is an important and wise thing to do because it helps you maintain your identity, your individuality, your autonomy, and it increases the trust in a relationship.
This is Cross Examined Life, the place where you're encouraged to ask more questions. The format is cross exam, and the subject is chosen by the guest. Join us as we elevate the art of disagreement, unpack assumptions, and challenge beliefs, one question at a time.
Welcome to episode 57 of Cross Examined Life, the show that improves the way we disagree with one another. I'm your host, Chris Tatum, and you'll enjoy this episode if you like conversations about autonomy, trust, and how money complicates relationships and creates power imbalances. Many thanks to our assistant audio editor, Olivia Pagliaro. Recently, listeners have been saying quite kind things about Cross Examine Life. Rob recently wrote in and said, "I enjoyed your podcast on schools, episode 24. Rob said he found it to exemplify rational debate, but more than that, it was about hashing out the source of the trade-off. You ensured your guest was able to clearly present their topic before entering into the debate. We're so grateful for feedback from listeners like Rob. This episode is sponsored by LukeRaffertyVisuals.com, your source for videos that help you exhibit your next project. Visit LukeRaffertyVisuals.com and mention Cross Examine Life for $100 off your first video. Hit me up at questions@crossexaminedlife.com and visit us on the Facebook community at Cross Examined Life. Now let's get to the episode. Here's Angela defending the position that married couples should use two separate checking accounts.
My name is Angela, and I am going to speak in defense of people having separate checking accounts when they're married. I believe this is an important and wise thing to do because it helps you maintain your identity, your individuality, your autonomy, and it increases the trust in a relationship. Speaking to the identity section, I think we all have pride in the money that we make and the money that we bring in. And being able to have access to your own funds also allows you to spend according to your personality. Marriage is no longer necessary for women to have a stable life. I would argue that in the first half of the 20th century, women's livelihood was based on their relationship to their husband's salary. Now that has changed. The workforce is about 50% women. And now marriage is becoming more something you decide to do, not something you need to do. I think relationships are healthier when both people are able to maintain their individuality as a couple, as opposed to being consumed just by the title of wife or husband and wife. As far as autonomy goes, marriage is a business and the world is a business. Everyone should be keenly aware of how to maintain their finances and the state of their finances. It's no longer wise to see one person in a relationship as the gatekeeper to finances. It also helps you maintain good financial status as far as credit scores go, as far as not absorbing the debt of your partner, and makes you healthier financially. As far as trust goes, I would argue that one of the main topics of fighting among couples is how you spend your money. To be able to have open conversations about the costs or the goals you have together financially, it puts that all in the open. And it also means you don't have to lie about how you spend your money. You don't have to hide bags of purchases or hoard funds to do what you need to do. It makes everything transparent and I think provides more dignity to both individuals as they talk about that subject throughout their relationship.
Thank you so much for outlining your argument and the reasons that you have for supporting it. I want to ask you to clarify, if you could, just a little bit about what you mean by separate checking accounts, what that practically looks like, and if that extends all the way to sort of payments for the sort of very basics like utilities and rent, or if that's something that you're sort of separating out as a different issue.
I think there are multiple ways you could go about it. For me personally, for practicality, I would say separate checking accounts and then a joint account for joint expenses, because I think the act of transferring funds and making one just on an accounting basis, it's easier to have one pot to be pulling from. I would argue for an agreed joint account that covers, I would say, monthly expenses, savings, child costs, anything that you would incorporate as something that the couple wants to do together or needs to do together. And then all the cash that's left over, I would say, goes into your checking account, your personal checking account.
You say anything the couple wants to do together, does that extend to luxury activities, going out to dinner, movie tickets? Is that paid out of the joint account or is that paid from separate accounts under the scheme you're suggesting?
I think it depends on the couple. If I were to be looking at a budget, I would put that as a line item within a budget. But maybe a couple would like also the opportunity to treat someone and to know that they're treating somebody. I think it depends. I think definitely when you're looking at like vacations or purchasing a new vehicle, those are extra expenses I would add to that.
You said anything related to the children. Maybe we could go so far as to say everything related to the children should be out of this joint.
I would say that. Anytime you have to track a budget, it gets really tricky. So essentially trying to come up with a number for the month, which includes clothes, childcare, school supplies, entertainment activities for them, fees for clubs, include that.
So far, I have rent or mortgage, savings, every child cost, entertainment, vacations, vehicle, coming out of the joint expense. What's left? What goes in the separate bank accounts? What's that money earmarked for, if anything?
I think that's personal expenses, clothes, your own entertainment costs, foods outside of home, if you work out on the job. Also, if you yourself have personal financial goals, you want to save a certain amount to put towards an additional retirement account, or it could be things like, you know, you want to buy a luxury item or you want to go to a conference and you need to spend that money, whatever is separate from the house. That would be personal.
I do want to drill down on that a little bit. One of the first things you said is that having these separate accounts helps couples maintain their own identity. Under that, you sort of described how each member of the couple could spend according to their own personality with their own account. I guess my question is that healthy for a couple to be spending from account with money in it without running it by their partner and sort of just saying, well, my personality is inclined to do this, so I'm going to spend it this way?
You mean spending money from their personal account that's separate?
That's right. That's right.
I think that's fine, because that's the whole point, is that once you understand the money that you are putting into your shared living costs or living dreams or aspirations, then the rest of that money is up for you to spend. I don't think anybody likes to be questioned about how they spend their money. I don't think you have to tell somebody when you're going to spend your own money, if that answers the question.
It's just sort of part of this bigger question of, is it really your own money if part of your goal of being in this marriage is to sort of support a household? Is it really, not as a legal matter, maybe we're not at that question yet, but just as like a practical matter, is it fair to say this thing that I work towards bringing in for the good of the household also happens to be mine and I need run my dream purchase by no one?
I mean, I think it's fine to share what your dream purchase is. I don't think there's any need to be secretive about this kind of stuff, because you're going to roll in with whatever luxury item. Let's say I wanted to buy a Coach bag. Sure.
Sure.
So I'm going to spend like $450 on the Coach bag of my dreams. It's going to be very aware and apparent that the Coach bag has appeared. I also think that speaks to trust. I should be able to say, I'm going to go purchase this item that I've saved for. I'm not asking your permission. I'm just going to let you know it's going to appear. And I'm very excited about it. This is like a moment in my day. I think for any reason why you feel like if you have to hide things, I think that's a bigger issue about the relationship more than it is about you having the freedom to spend your personal money and not have to get clearance. I don't think your freedom for what you want to purchase should be dependent on your relationship unless you are not meeting the financial needs of your partner.
Sure. Well, don't you think one of the roles of a partnership is sort of helping the other person think about kind of what they're doing and being thoughtful about doing it well? And you can sort of act as a check on the other person's spending habits and help them spend in the way that's most in line with their goals. Do you think that's accurate?
Yes and no. I mean, I think getting feedback is always important because it helps you really analyze your position and makes you question if what you're deciding is right. But I think the moment you try to say that you are more correct than the other person, or you try to dictate how they should live, I think that really, really makes for a scary relationship, because you also should trust that this person is hopefully going to act in their best interest. And yes, you can articulate your position and hopefully your partner is going to be open to hearing it. But I still think you should do what you want to do at the end of the day.
And taking the example of the Coach bag, the way you described it sounds like you sort of would notify the spouse, this is what I'm going to do, under a scheme where they're sort of have a shared account. It seems like it would be more of a question like, hey, I plan to do this. Does that make sense to you too? Like, is there any issue that I'm not seeing with this thing that I plan to do?
I would just say I'm going to buy it. Now, maybe I have a privileged position because I am someone who does accounting and compliance. I am aware of budget management. I own a Coach bag. It is also one of only two bags I own, and I will wear it until it dies. That's just me. Yes, it gets a little trickier when you're talking about people who don't understand how to manage their money or who do make purchases that at the end of the month, they come in the red and then their partner has to bail them out. But that would be also a situation that just is inherently a problem in a joint account situation too. Understanding someone's spending habits and being okay with that is crucial before getting married. You have to figure it out before you get married.
Let me give you a hypothetical of a couple that has sort of set aside all the automatic expense payments that you suggest with a joint account. They have these leftover amounts in each of their separate accounts, and they never get close to being in the red. They do have this extra, but the husband has this unfortunate habit of spending an outrageous amount, maybe $1,000 a month at casinos. It might not be the case that he has an unhealthy addiction in the sense of he can't stop or he's sort of causing these financial losses for the family, but it's an expense that maybe doesn't seem super smart or like a great investment for the family's future. Doesn't there become an issue there where that money is sort of being spent without checking with the spouse? Because then there has to be skimping in other areas. Like, we can't get more clothing for our kids, or we can't allocate more money to our savings because we're sort of setting this money aside that then you go spend in this less than fantastic way.
So in this scenario, is there no joint account for basic expenses? Is it just the two? No,
there is a joint account for the basic expenses. And then he's pulling that from his sort of own account.
But not touching the joint account.
That's right. That's right.
So it would impact that joint account because it's possible more money that can be put in there that's not being put in.
Yeah, it seems to me when you build that joint account and say, how much are we going to spend on clothing for our children every month or food for our clothing? You say, well, how much is available? How much do we want to be spending on these things? And aren't you sort of spending less on clothing, education, food, because you're leaving some left over for the individuals?
I don't know. That's hard. Because I would say that no matter what, the joint account needs like a 15 to 20% contingency amount that goes into it every month that covers anything that possibly goes over budget. I mean, it's also his prerogative. At the end of the day, if it's not affecting what directly needs to be paid, I think it's more of an issue about, is he okay? Why is he spending $1,000? That's more of like an, are you okay question, as opposed to, I can't go buy extra clothes. Because in the case of gambling, it's, I'm just throwing my money to the wind. I would wonder like, well, are you looking for a thrill? Is there something else we can do that can give you that high that you might be getting from gambling? That's a lot of money that you could be doing lots of interesting things with. Let's talk about it.
Would you say that to your spouse?
I would. Because I mean, I feel
to me that you don't really like second guessing the ways other people use their money from their own account.
Yes. If I decided to buy $1,000 worth of clothes every month that I didn't really need, I would expect that at some point I'm going to get asked, am I okay? Because there's also this mentality that we purchase to make ourselves feel better. So it isn't so much that I'm judging your purchase. It's that, is this possibly a behavior that is speaking to something else? Why do you feel like you need XYZ for this amount? So I don't think it's questioning as much as it's having a conversation about habits and seeing if they're okay.
Let me ask about this general or common fund that the regular expenses would be debited out of. Under the scheme that you suggested, these sort of separate accounts where there's a disparity in income, let's say the husband makes 50 a year and the wife makes 100 a year, what proportion of each spouse's money should be contributed to that joint account?
Those numbers should be determined by the ratio of what each person owned. So if someone's making 50% more than the other person. And I think this also brings up a lot of questions about general budget habits. You could say, okay, so everything that's guaranteed a month, utilities, food, rent, all the basics can go in proportion to our income. And then you might decide that, well, for other larger items that we're saving up for, or maybe we'll make that 50-50. I think there's a lot of ways to do it, but I definitely think you have to take into consideration the disparity between the two incomes, because the person who's making less shouldn't be penalized by having to commit a larger amount that puts them in a scary financial situation based on the separate accounts.
If there's unexpected needs that arise, is it sort of fair to expect that partner who makes more to kind of contribute more frequently to some of those unexpected needs?
Sure, but I think it also involves a conversation. I mean, I just don't think you can expect anything when it comes to money and your partner. I think it's an honest conversation to have. I would say, yeah, if there's more money, then they probably have more available funds because 30% of the expenses are being also taken care of by someone else, or 50, or however that ratio equals out.
But when that large expense needs paying the $1,000 for the vehicle repair that you weren't expecting, if you have a joint account, you simply pay it because it's our money and we're paying for, let's say, the one vehicle the family owns. If it's separate accounts, there could be some solid disagreement there about who's paying what percentage of that car repair. Don't you think that would lead to some unfortunate issues?
But I think those issues exist in general. It's hard to say because those, I would also argue that that would exist with a sole joint account, how much we're spending and whatnot. But the one thing that separate bank accounts forces you to do is to talk about every expense that relates to the house. And I don't think that's a negative. I think being very open about the financial situation, what you should be contributing is healthy. I think it shows that you're continuing to support each other and support what you're committed to. So it might like make any situation have to be talked about. And that could probably be annoying because why can't we just take it out of the account? But it's also you are being super active in your financial situation and having open financial conversations and hopefully eliminating financial disagreements in the long term or big disagreements.
What would you say if one partner lost a job? They were out for any number of months, 3, 6, 9 months. Should they sort of collapse the money and just say, I'm going to get you a debit card from my account. We're both going to draw from it. No sense of each month comparing my large account because I'm still making money to your tiny account. What would you say there?
I think put it in the joint and let them, you know, or transfer the money directly into their personal account. You still have to actively support your partner if they need help. That is part of the commitment. You're going to be with them through thick and thin. So yeah, if someone gets laid off, it's going to cause financial stress and you're going to have to help them out. And you're doing so however that makes sense for you, whether you want them to go into your personal account or put it in theirs. How are you going to give them access to the money? Because at that point, it impacts the joint that you have 0% coming in there. Therefore, that ratio has to be made up in the other area. And that's part of being a partner who cares about somebody. You know, they didn't mean to get laid off, hopefully. And that's just like the same thing can happen if someone gets sick or if any certain life event allows someone to not make as much as they used to. And also,
doesn't that create like a power imbalance where the one person's like, hey, I used to make money and now I'm not. Could I have some? I want to like buy this. Would you mind giving me some for this thing I really want to get?
That was women for a long, long time. I mean, inherently, that is a power imbalance is something I'm terrified of because I have seen women exist in a constant power imbalance and have seen them get in very scary situations because they were not engaged with the financial status of their home. That is going to be a power imbalance that people have to work through, but hopefully it's done with more grace. And who knows? I mean, you could also say the same thing about what if someone's a stay-at-home mom? What happens in that situation because they are not bringing an income and that's 100% that person. But you could also argue that a stay-at-home mom technically would make $115,000 a year, which is the stat that salary.com came up with. So does that mean you pay your wife or husband, whoever's staying at home, stay-at-home parent? That's what I should have said, because I know a lot of dads now who are staying home. I mean, that power imbalance is always a problem. I don't think it's aggravated by separate accounts. I just think it's more noticeable because we live in a world now where we can maintain separate accounts because of the earning power of both parties.
Why don't you think that power imbalance is mitigated somewhat by a joint account where the stay-at-home parent just spends money as freely as the breadwinning parent and doesn't have to kind of go to that other breadwinning spouse and say, hey, can I have some? They can just simply spend it from the joint account. Isn't that what? Doesn't that mitigate that power imbalance somewhat that you're concerned about?
You mean like get rid of it or?
Or doesn't it get rid of it or lessen it to a significant degree?
I think it does lessen it because it's agreed upon that that money is up to that person to spend. That is their personal allotment that after everything goes to the joint expenses. I would think so. Because it also, I think the thing is it allows you to have freedom. It allows you financial freedom and it allows you to stay financially literate if you're operating your own account and if you're tracking your own personal money. I mean, that's the thing in that situation too. Because someone is stay at home, they should still be able to maintain their own credit score. They should still be able to understand their financial status, because the fear that I have as a woman, if something happens and you are not financially literate and you don't have a good credit score because XYZ happened to your spouse, you are in real trouble. And I remember as a kid, there was a mother of one of my friends who her husband did some things with the money that she wasn't aware of, and he went off to prison. She was a single mom all of a sudden, and she had no idea. She had no idea where the things were, and she had to really learn very fast. So anything that can help people stay financially smart and maintain a good status, I think that does help.
Having separate accounts sort of forces you to be the master and accountant of your own account.
I think it also, as a spouse in that situation, when you are providing your money for someone who stays at home, you are also allowing them to have freedom, and you are supporting them to be the best that they can be as a citizen in a financially driven world. Yeah.
Well, you sort of have that runaway train scenario of the sort of spouse going off and doing stuff financially damaging to the family that the other spouse doesn't know. It seems to me that that's easier to accomplish or to let happen accidentally where people have separate accounts and you don't know what that person's doing with their finances. You don't know what their credit card debt is. You don't know how aggressively they're paying it off. They do sort of have that runaway train. Like, isn't that easier to stop, easier to find and solve when there's like a joint account and you kind of have a meeting about what are we doing about this joint money all the time?
Yes and no. I mean, I guess it would be really hard to track in a scenario that you don't have a joint for shared expenses. But as far as I know, if you do have your own personal account and your own personal credit cards, whatever your spouse is doing to ruin their credit score doesn't get incurred on your end and you don't absorb their debt. As far as I know, I'm not sure. But yes, they can be a runaway train. But I believe that with the two personal account situation, that train never comes colliding to you as far as your long-term financial livelihood. Yes, you're going to collide with it when you can't pay for things in the home, when it's affecting your daily life or your monthly life or your kids in the immediate. But in the long term, when you go to apply for another credit card because you need more money, you're not going to be denied because your spouse did XYZ with their credit card, that you still are your own institution of financial well-being. If your spouse decides to go off the rails financially, they're going to do it regardless, but hopefully it's to protect both parties, given anything that can happen in life.
You're saying if you have separate accounts, at least you're not as impacted as you would be.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We're all going to have opinions about how people spend their money. I think I read that it's like 70% of all fights in married couples are around money, even more than the list was funny. It was more than sex, really, like the status of their like in-laws and also what to eat for dinner. Finances was above all of that. So I think no matter what, you are going to have opinions about people spend their money. You're going to be observing how they're doing it. But I don't know, if someone wants to hide how they're doing it, it's going to be hard to track anyway. It's hopefully, I don't know how to safeguard against that completely, because people are people and they're going to want to hide their behaviors if they feel like it.
If you lived in a place where legally all property and money that's owned by one spouse is legally the property of both members of the couple, that does cover many places. But if you lived in such a place, does what you suggest make less sense, or do you still think it's important and worth doing?
I still think it's important. I think because it's also linked to you feeling good about yourself, you feeling like you're not watched, you being educated about financial situations. I think it offers a lot for confidence and education, and facilitates open conversations with your partner. So I would say for those qualities that both make you a better individual and therefore someone better to be with, it would be advised.
I like to give my guests the opportunity to indicate if this cross-exam has changed, maybe not their opinion, but their perspective in any way around this issue. So I'm just curious if, as a result of these questions and thinking through this, if your perspective has changed in any way.
You mean, was I pro or for it before?
Has it just made you think differently about the issue, or maybe more critically of your position?
It definitely has. Especially it made me think about how I grew up, because my parents are co-business owners. They talked about finances left and right. They both had total understanding of what was happening. And it made me really think about probably an exception to the rule that I had parents talking about the money that was in each account at dinner every night and who was going to deposit the check from the contractor and what are we going to do. Because they were co-owners, it made me realize that when I eventually meet someone, really understanding how they deal with their finances, and if they believe that I'm okay to deal with my own, I am an exception to the rule, but that's as how I've seen it operate successfully. Now, they didn't have separate because everything was mixed anyway, because they were getting the same paychecks from the same places. When you own a business, a lot of the time your personal money has to roll into the business during hard times. It just made me realize that I have a privileged view of people who had similar financial patterns and knowledge and savviness about finances. And it made me realize that separate bank accounts most likely help facilitate a situation that I can mimic, which is the successful relationship I saw my parents have when it comes to money.
Has it made you any more attracted to the idea of a single common account for both members of the couple?
Yes, for ease of paying and also for strategizing to really get on the same page, to find those items and those things that you're going to work towards together, because you can't exist totally independently financially, because being a partner means you're going to support that person and support your common dreams. But it did make me think a lot about what are the things that would start to become not a me situation and a we situation, and how to look at my money to support that, how to allow that to happen in an organic way. Because I don't think about that a lot. I'm a very hard worker who really keeps track of her own money and hasn't had to do that yet.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for arguing this position so thoughtfully on Cross Examine Life and for answering all my questions so fully.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I've been enjoying this new podcast recently called And Then Suddenly. I thought maybe you could tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what And Then Suddenly is all about.
So I am a writer based in New York City, and I released a podcast called And Then Suddenly, where I talk to a diverse group of people about one moment that unexpectedly turned their lives upside down. What was the impact of that moment? I never want to know what they're going to talk about. I go into the dark and I learn some new things, and it's a moment inspired by my own And Suddenly moment, which is I almost kicked the bucket and it totally took away the career that I was working towards and rewired my brain. I am finding out from the guests that I'm talking to who know about neuroscience. So my brain is rewired and I started a podcast.
That is awesome. I've really been enjoying it. Episode one is especially fantastic for anyone who wants to dig right into it. But where can people find you online, Angela?
You can find the And Then Suddenly podcast at andthensuddenlypodcast.com. I have an Instagram and Facebook page for the show, and you can find me on my personal Twitter, which is at just plain Angela.
Awesome. Angela, again, thanks so much for being on Cross Examine Life. This has been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed looking up my facts. I learned so much about the latest marriage statistics.
Yeah. Terrific. Well, thanks for sharing them with us.
All right. Thanks so much.
Welcome to Practical Takeaway Tips, the part of the show where we give you tips that you can use based on today's cross-exam. First, you may recall Angela indicating the difference between questioning and having a conversation where you approach with judgment. And she said, when you have concerns about what someone else is doing, you don't necessarily have to question them judgmentally, but instead you can initiate a conversation by asking questions like, are you okay? Or how are things going in your life? And I think we can use this as a tip to approach conversations with an attitude of asking questions rather than attacking the person from a place of judgment. Secondly, Angela reminded us that by having open financial conversations more frequently, we eliminate or lessen financial disagreements in the future. So I encourage you to engage in financial conversations more frequently, as Angela suggested, even if they require significant vulnerability, as they're likely to reduce the chance for disagreements later on. And third, you may require Angela saying that she likes to ask herself the question, what are the things that have become a we situation and not a me situation? So that no matter the kind of conversation we find ourselves in, we can bring that same perspective and find an outcome that's less about staying inside of our own brains and focusing on the me, and instead working towards a solution that works for everyone. So, hope that those are useful to you in bringing practical tips to your next disagreement. What did you think of today's cross-exam? Join our Facebook group, the Cross Examine Life Community, to let other listeners know. There, you can find a summary of Angela's argument and an ongoing discussion about whether or not she proved her point.
Well, that'll about do it for today's Cross Exams. If you enjoyed them, please leave us a rating in the iTunes store. And mention this show next time you're swapping podcast recommendations with friends.
Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what we're doing here, find more of our questions on iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to propose a topic or sign up to be a guest, please visit us at crossexaminedlife.com.